All throughout the mid to late 90s, I spent my time alternating back and forth between my parents, who had divorced when I was 6. During the summer, I preferred staying at my dad's single-story ranch-style house in a quiet cul-de-sac as opposed to my mom's place in the city. My dad's place was much quieter, and had a better feeling of privacy with its big, fenced-in backyard. During the warmer months, I would enjoy sleeping with my window cracked open and my fan on. In the city, it was always too noisy to have a window open at night. I remember at the time, my dad was usually working late and would arrive home around 8 p.m. or later. So the majority of the day I was alone. I would spend my time on my dad's computer, using the dial-up internet. Back in those days, if you wanted to use internet, you had to keep in mind that you were sacrificing your ability to use the phone. You also had to sit at a desk all day when you surfed the web. On this particular day, it was getting pretty late, and I had been sitting for a while, so I decided to get up and make myself a snack. The sunlight was fading outside, and it was just starting to get dark. But I didn't turn on any lights as I walked down the hallway and turned into the kitchen. Using the light from inside the fridge, I began to shuffle around looking for something to make a sandwich out of, when I heard something that made me pause. Back inside my room, I had a lamp on my nightstand that had these tiny charms hanging from the shade. Whenever I went to raise or lower my window, the nightstand would shake, and the charms would make tiny wind chime type sounds. I was used to the sound, but I had never once heard it from outside my room, because I was the only one who ever touched my window. And for such a small sound, I was surprised how far it traveled. There was this animalistic moment where my entire body froze, and I felt my sense of hearing dial itself up to 11 as I strained to catch every small noise coming from my room. I heard a couple of footsteps on my carpet, some muffled voices, and I heard the creak of my door opening. I let the fridge door swing shut and rushed over to the back door, but as soon as I opened it, I paused. Out the back door led to our screened-in back porch, which led outside to our fenced-in yard. Going through the screen door would make way too much noise, and whoever was now in the house would be able to catch me before I was able to unlock the gate to exit the backyard. I would have to run back towards the intruders to get to the front door, so not knowing what else to do, I ducked into a small closet right next to the fridge, where my dad kept the vacuum. There was barely enough room inside for me to stand up straight, and I knew that if they happened to open the door, I was caught. So I kept my hand on the doorknob to hold it closed. I heard two sets of footsteps walking down the front hall, and suddenly somebody was in the kitchen. He wasn't even being cautious. He was just sauntering around, opening cabinets and drawers like he belonged there. I heard him open the fridge right next to me and knock a few things around inside. I heard an annoyed voice coming from the hallway.
"What the hell are you doing?"
The second voice responded.
"I'm starving, man. I haven't eaten all day. Get the fuck out of there,"
the first voice snapped. The fridge door shut abruptly, and suddenly there was a tug on the handle of the closet I was hiding in. I tensed, and I held the door latch firm. All the guy had to do was pull on it hard, and I would have toppled right onto the floor.
"Hey, this one's locked."
The voice came from right outside the door. As soon as I heard it, I knew I was done, and I mentally prepared myself to be kidnapped or murdered. The second voice came again over by the back door.
"Hey, did you open this?"
"No, why?"
"Then somebody was just here. They must have run out back."
I heard both of the intruders run out to the back porch. I could have taken that moment to run, but I was shaking so hard at me nearly getting caught that I didn't trust myself to try and take a step. I thought about trying to go for the cordless phone on the counter, but I remembered the dial-up internet was still using the phone line. After another few moments, the two men ran back into the house and made for the front door. I heard the front door unlock and swing open. They hadn't been out of the house for more than 5 seconds before I heard a police siren wailing as it drove past the house. Turns out my neighbor had spotted the two men walking around outside and called the cops as soon as she noticed them opening my window from the outside. They were kids themselves, really. One was 18 and the other was 19. My dad arrived home shortly after, and we ended up staying at my aunt's for the night. I was incredibly shaken for the next several days. and the smallest of noises made me anxious, and I was too afraid to be alone. Looking back now, those two kids likely would have taken off running if they had found me. They didn't even have any weapons on them. But at the time, I didn't know that, and the experience traumatized my tiny 11-year-old mind. Who would have thought on a quiet cul-de-sac with houses surrounding me on all sides, and the sun not even completely gone, that my house would be invaded? The city may be noisier, but at least at the time, it was safer. This event happened to me back in the summer of 1989, on a remote speck of land in Pawnee, Kansas, back when I was 30 years old. It was early evening and the sun was setting. There was a warm breeze outside, which I remember clearly because I had just burnt a bag of popcorn in my defective microwave and had flung open the windows to air out the kitchen. I don't remember what I left the house to go and find, but after tossing the burnt bag of popcorn into the trash, I recall exiting out the back door and walking towards the barn. I remember hearing a noise off to my left in the field, like a faint cough, but I ignored it. My mind was focused on other things, and I wasn't even remotely worried about a complete stranger could have been wandering across my property. As it turns out, I should have been. When I exited the barn and made my way back towards the house, I stopped dead in my tracks as I made eye contact with a very large and extremely unkempt bearded man, perhaps 10 yards away from me. Judging by the amount of gray on his beard, I determined him to be 60 or older. He was barefoot, wearing stained overalls in addition to suspenders over his bare torso, which struck me as being unnecessary and strange. While his body looked extremely worn down and tired, his eyes were wild and fierce, and full of hunger and malice. In his right hand, he carried a hatchet. And before I could form a sentence, I already visualized in my head how many steps it would take for him to reach me. I was alone, a vulnerable young woman, with no one around for miles to hear me scream, trapped out in the open by this man who appeared to have sprung from the grass, blocking the path to my house. I'm not sure how long we stood there in silence, but I recall I was about to ask him what he wanted when the man spoke up. I remember his voice was much deeper and more elegant than I expected it to be.
"I'll spare your life for some whiskey."
I stammered something, I don't recall what, and the man raised his voice and screamed at me.
"Whiskey!"
I took a reflexive step back, and the man started stomping towards me. He didn't raise the hatchet, but I'll never forget the hatred in his eyes as he closed the distance between us. That's when it happened. Blood exploded out of the side of his head, and he collapsed onto the grass, making a sound like a grunt as he hit. I might be remembering things slightly out of sequence, but I thought I heard the crack of a rifle echo after he fell, not before. I didn't stop to think or look twice. I sprinted for my kitchen, terrified that someone would fire a second shot at me. Once inside, I should have locked the door and called for help. But instead, I grabbed my car keys, ran out the front door, climbed into my tiny red Volvo, and drove to the nearest police station. It wasn't until I spoke to the officer at the desk that I realized that I had blood splatter on my dress. Three police cars escorted me home, at which point it was long after dark. They combed the area with flashlights and discovered a large pool of blood on my back lawn, but there was no body, not even the hatchet. They set up a perimeter and expanded their search, but by the time dawn came and my husband returned, they had found nothing. No trace of the bearded man or whoever had fired the rifle. They asked me multiple questions about the man and the sound of the gunshot. I suppose they were trying to determine the caliber and perhaps deduce how far away the gunman had been standing. But the incident happened so fast that there was some information that I just couldn't provide. The police brought out their hounds, who traced a scent for over a mile into our backwoods until the trail went cold, and nothing further was ever discovered or reported to me. To this day, I can't describe exactly who that bearded man was or who ended his life. My family has suspected that he might have been an escaped convict or a deranged madman, and whoever fired that shot must have been hunting him and chose to act in that moment to save my life because I have no doubt the bearded man would have done some serious harm to me. Sometimes I can bring myself to feel grateful to the unseen shooter, but other days I feel cold inside and afraid, knowing that regardless of whatever my family reasons or suspects, I'll never know for sure if that person with the rifle had not actually been aiming at me. Back in the spring of 1999, I was living in a loft apartment in Boulder, Colorado. The ceiling above my kitchen table leaked whenever it rained, and the window unit air conditioner was louder than a freight train, but otherwise it was acceptable and cozy, with a great view of the Rocky Mountains. At the time, I was writing articles for a paper, and after I had finished working my shift at the hardware store, I would spend about 3 hours writing and editing my column before bed. Normally, I would get to sleep by 1 or 2 in the morning. Directly across the hall from me was a second loft apartment, which had been empty for a few years, before a middle-aged woman and her cats eventually moved in. They were the only two apartments on the second floor of the building, but our doors didn't have numbers or indicators, such as apartment A or B, to distinguish the two separate residencies. I had a P.O. box, and I never received any mail at home anyway, so it didn't really bother me. But it did cause some confusion that I believe nearly resulted in my death. One evening I was typing away on my computer while listening to soft, classical music on the radio. When I got up to refill my glass of wine, I walked past my front door, and completely on a random impulse, I decided to look out the peephole. I don't know what I expected to see. It was just after 1 in the morning after all, but sometimes you just need that peace of mind, which is exactly what I didn't get. Standing outside my neighbor's door, directly across from me, was a short, heavy-set bald man with gloves on his hands, but no shoes on. I remember spotting his gray socks against the dark wooden color of the floorboards. He wore a dark green windbreaker and jeans, and appeared to be testing the knob of my neighbor's door. I remember the sensation of my heart skipping a beat. I had no idea who this man was. I had never seen him before in the building. But it was his actions more than his appearance that made me uneasy. It was clear that he was trying to be very quiet. He had no key, but was cautiously turning the knob back and forth to see if it was unlocked. I stared at him suspiciously for perhaps 30 to 40 seconds, concentrating very hard on keeping quiet, aware that if he got the door open, I may have to run and find my phone to call 911. After another few moments, he released her knob and bent down to open a gym bag by his feet that I hadn't noticed before. I caught a side view of his face, and he looked older than I had initially expected. Suddenly noticing his face made me nervous for some reason, and I began to feel my palms starting to sweat. Realizing I still had my wine glass in my hand, I took a careful step away from the door and set my glass down on the table. I returned to the door, both hands carefully pressed against the wood, as if making to reinforce it. I peered out through the peephole again. My blood froze. The man was looking directly at my door, standing completely still, a look of suspicion in his dark eyes, and a crowbar clutched in his left hand. My heart began pounding so loud in my ears, I was convinced that the stranger could probably hear it. The kind of peephole the door had didn't really work only one way, like most of them do nowadays. It just kind of frosted outside of the glass to blur the view of whoever was inside. All the lights in my apartment were out except for my desk lamp. When I stepped away from the door, had he seen the lamp shining through the peephole? And when I stepped back, had he noticed the small pinprick of light vanish? I felt sweat begin to form on the back of my neck as the man took 2 steps forward and jiggled my knob, which was securely locked. I forced myself to stay put, worried that if he made to break in, even with my full weight on the door, I wouldn't be able to prevent him from getting in. The man jiggled the knob twice more, and I was terrified by the fact that we were so close together. Had the door not been there, he would have been able to feel my breath on his skin. I watched as the man again looked up at the peephole. I remember his blue eyes feeling cold, savage, and malicious. I just knew that he intended to cause me or my neighbor harm. That's when the unthinkable happened. He knocked softly 3 times on my door, and I heard him whisper, "Open it." There was no way he could have known for sure that I was there. I imagine he was trying to get a reaction in case someone was standing there. But I was legitimately too terrified to move or speak. In fact, I was barely breathing. It's clear to me that's what he was doing, because when I had been across the room at my computer, there was no way I would have heard that knock. It was a direct threat to whoever was close enough to hear it. The man stood there for maybe another 10 seconds, then he grabbed his bag and headed down the stairs, barely making any noise on the wood, thanks to him not having shoes on. I remember being too afraid to turn my back on the door, terrified that he was bluffing, and that he would come back upstairs at any moment. I made myself count to 20, and then I took a deep breath, walked across the room to my desk, and picked up my Nokia cell phone and called the police. Whispering the entire time, I informed the operator that there was a suspicious man right outside my apartment door, but I had barely spoken for a full minute when she informed me that a squad car was already en route to that address. I happened to glance out the window, and I noticed the bald man was standing on the sidewalk beneath me. When he saw me peeking, he waved a hand up at me and then disappeared across the street into an alleyway. I nearly choked on my breath and told the operator exactly where the man had gone. When the police arrived an agonizing slow few minutes later, they searched the alleyway before coming up to interview me and my neighbor. She had called the police a few minutes before I had, because she had seen the shadows of feet coming from under her door in her dark apartment, thanks to the light in the hallway. She revealed that she was in the witness protection program, and before the morning came, she and her cats were taken away by two men in FBI jackets, and I never saw her again. I went to the station the following day and provided a description of the man to a sketch artist. To this day, I'm not positive the stranger was specifically looking for my neighbor, but if I had to guess, I would say it wasn't just a burglar looking to rob us. My theory was that because there was no numbers on the doors, he wasn't sure which apartment was hers, and therefore tested both. When he wasn't sure which apartment to break into, he decided to play it safe and leave. To the best of my knowledge, they never caught him. I have nothing but my own personal suspicions, but I suspect my neighbor may have had something to do with the ongoing trial of Whitey Bulger and the Winter Hill Gang. When she had spoken to the police, I noticed her Boston accent. And a year later, it was all over the papers how Whitey and his gang member associates were being charged with multiple murders and colluding with a crooked FBI agent named John Connolly. The following day, I added 3 more locks to my door. I never saw that man or anyone else suspicious outside my door again. I lived there for another 4 years, and that second apartment was never rented again. I wanted to share this story so that it will serve as a reminder to always follow your gut. Don't ever assume that just because you're in your own home and you get a strange feeling that you're just being paranoid. I'll give you an example. Several months ago, right as autumn was beginning and the days were becoming shorter, I was home alone at the house I shared with my roommate. Seasonal depression sinking in, I decided just to stay inside and have a lazy evening. I was on the couch, flipping through Netflix, when I got this overwhelming sensation that something wasn't right. It wasn't just a feeling of guilt or doubt because I wasn't being productive. It actually felt as though the world around me wasn't in perfect alignment, like something was out of place. It's the feeling you get while you're driving and one of your tires is slowly deflating. Unable to shake this feeling, I stood up, shut off the TV and headed upstairs, not turning off any lights on the ground floor. Once upstairs, I turned on the hall light and entered the bathroom. I didn't feel like I was being watched necessarily, but I did feel this sense of invasion. I got some music playing on my phone and decided that I was going to take a shower, determined to distract myself and shake off this feeling. If I had had any pets, I would have looked to see how they were acting. But I didn't. I could only go off of how I felt, and I chose to ignore the feeling of unrest. Before I was done taking my clothes off, I thought I heard movement from downstairs. I muted my phone for a moment, but the noise didn't come again. I figured I was either hearing things or my roommate had returned home early and was downstairs. I didn't think for a moment that some stranger had entered my house. That's the type of thing that happened to other people. I forced myself not to think like that. I knew that all my doors were locked, and I lived in a safe neighborhood. That's what I kept telling myself. I turned the shower on, finished getting undressed, and got inside. I stayed in the shower longer than I needed to. Being in there helped, but it didn't completely calm my nerves. As soon as I turned off the water, the feeling of invasion was back, and suddenly, I decided that I needed to be very quiet. I stepped carefully out of the shower and turned off my phone. It was then that I noticed under the crack of the door, there was a shadow of someone standing just outside. And the only thing standing between me and that person was an old wooden door and a latch lock that anyone could break if they threw their weight into it hard enough. I stared down at the shadow, and finally I allowed myself to panic. Had it been my roommate or a family member with a spare key, they wouldn't be standing that still. They would knock on the door and announce themselves if they needed anything. I didn't even hear anyone breathing. A scenario flashed through my head of me not noticing the shadow, throwing open the door in an obvious fashion, and having a knife driven into my gut as I fell into the arms of a masked stranger. I slowly put on my shorts and my shirt, and just stared at the shadow under the door, still unmoving. After another moment, I made a decision. I slowly began to open the bathroom window. I flushed the toilet and lifted on the wooden frame. I then stepped up and then hung my legs out the window. As I was sliding out fully on the roof, my head knocked against the blinds and made them rattle. I swear, in that split second, my heart stopped, and I heard movement from outside the door. I leapt out the window right as I heard the door crash open behind me. When I slid across the roof, I immediately let myself fall to the cold ground. I picked myself up and sprinted across my lawn, without even bothering to look back to see if anyone was chasing me. I ran to my neighbor's house, pounded on the back door until they let me in, and I called the police from my phone after they locked the door behind me. When they got there, they searched my house and discovered that it was empty, but inside every single room they found evidence of footprints and signs that someone had been rummaging around through drawers and personal belongings. The intruder had been wandering from room to room while I was in the shower. Outside the living room window, they discovered very specific DNA that indicated that he was watching me as I was laying on the couch. This guy had patiently waited for me to leave the ground floor before entering the house through the back door. He then waited for me outside the bathroom when he could have easily broken in and grabbed me. There was a thousand things that could have gone wrong that night. I could have ignored my gut feeling. The intruder could have been less patient. I could have shut lights off behind me. He could have waited down the hall instead of outside the door. I really believe that I had 1 in 100 chance of getting out of there, and I rolled the dice and beat the odds. I should be dead. I have no idea who that guy was, or why he chose my house, but I do know one thing for certain. I will never doubt my gut feeling again. Please take this to heart, everyone listening. Try to always be aware of your surroundings. Play it safe even if it feels silly, and never ignore your instincts. I was around 19 or 20 when this occurred. I was living in a small apartment with my best friend, Mason, at the time. The front door was about 2 to 4 feet from his bedroom door, while mine was down the hallway toward the back of the apartment. One morning at around 3 a.m., I woke to some heavy knocking on our front door. My dog instinctively reacted and began barking. At first, I ignored it, thinking that it was an estranged family member of mine I wanted nothing to do with. That's a story for another time. I also knew that I shouldn't open the door to anyone this late, as we were on the first floor of our apartment building. The knocking continued, so I grabbed a knife and walked to the door. I looked through the peephole to see a girl in her late teens on the other side. She was dressed nicely, like she had been to a club or bar hopping. We were about 5 miles from the University of Central Florida, so it wasn't uncommon for college kids to be out and about. With much trepidation, I opened the door and I asked the girl what she wanted. She explained that she came here with a guy who started acting very strange and she needed help.
I was about to ask if she wanted me to call the police, when we both heard a door open and slam shut on the level above us, followed by someone barreling down the staircase near my front door. We both looked to the stairs at the end of the hallway, listening to the booming footsteps descending. The girl panicked and pushed past me into my apartment. I then quickly locked my door. I brought her into our living room. I was now flustered that I had been thrusted into this situation against my will. But whatever. I guess if things were reversed, I'd want someone to help me out too. And I felt better after hitting my bong. Thankfully, no one came to the door. The girl was still very upset and asked me through tears if I would walk her back to her car. I said sure, and I would bring my dog, Catty, along with me, who is a pit bull Rottweiler mix who would bite someone's ass cheek off if they tried anything. I leashed my dog and we walked to the parking lot, which was not too far away from my building. I watched the girl get into her car, and she thanked me before closing the door and driving away. The next morning, I asked Mason if he had heard all the commotion. I didn't hear anything at all, dude. I slept soundly through the night. When I told him what happened, he didn't believe me at first and even teased me. You're so full of shit. You probably dreamed up that scenario from all those bong hits. I started second-guessing the whole thing, but deep down, I know that it happened. The stuff I smoke is good, but it's not that good. I still have no idea what the guy on the second level looked like or what his intentions with that girl were. But I like to think that I saved that girl from being assaulted, or worse.
I was only 13 years old when this happened. I would be paid extra since I was going to be babysitting so many kids. I don't recall how many, but there were a lot. The reason why I was trusted with so many was because I knew them since my parents and their parents were all friends growing up, making us kind of form into a group. Now, I was the oldest out of every single kid, which was the reason I was in charge. Of course, it was going to be a long night, knowing that our parents would be at some bar far away until like around 2 in the morning, and then stay at a hotel. For some background, I knew the kids, and they knew me. I being the oldest, 13 at the time, and the youngest being around 4. There was definitely a little bit of an age gap. The majority of the kids were around 9 to 10. Anyway, the parents left, and when they did, it was already around 4 in the afternoon. About 2.5 hours later, I made dinner for them. We sat down, and everyone ate their pasta. Because all the kids were together, and they all knew each other, things got pretty crazy. I won't go into detail on exactly what went down, but some of the kids were just totally wild. I didn't really mind it though. It was pretty funny at the same time, but that's besides the point. So after a couple more hours, it was getting pretty late. I recall it being around 11:30 when kids were starting to settle down. I had to take care of some of the kids who injured themselves by doing some really stupid stuff that was really dangerous, and I couldn't make it in time since I had to deal with some other problems as well. But I would consider myself a very caring and kind person, because I always did what I needed to do to calm them down. So like I said, it was around 11:30 when they were starting to settle down, and then not too long after, they were starting to pass out. I brought and carried them upstairs, and put half of them in one of the two kids' rooms. For the sake of keeping the real names out, basically we were at the house that belonged to the Abels family. Ava and Dom were the kids in the family, making it their house. I put half the kids in Dom's room, and the other half in Ava's room. They passed out very quickly after that. I went back downstairs to chill out, and then listen to some music. After listening to music for a while, Ava comes downstairs, and this is where things start to take a turn for the worst. I had to look because I was listening so loud that I couldn't even hear her calling my name. She then said in a really scared tone, "Something keeps being thrown at the window in my room. I'm really scared." I was a little uneasy to be hearing this since this was such a weird thing to be happening at this time of night. I gave her a hug and I assured her that everything would be alright and that I would go check it out. The bedrooms were on the 3rd floor, so this was especially weird since the room's windows were really high up. I went into Ava's room and I saw that the kids were sleeping. I guess no one else had heard the something hitting the window. I started to think that Ava was just making this up or something. I went back downstairs and I went to the couch where Ava was. I was a bit surprised to see that Ava wasn't there. This is when I then hear something from downstairs. It sounded like a muffled girl scream for help. I quickly ran down there to see Ava in the garage, then being dragged out of the garage by a dark figure. Someone had forgotten to close the garage door, so it was just open. I was so scared and I went into full-on panic mode. I then went back inside to go grab a weapon or something that I can use in quick defense. I found this spear-looking thing that's used for fires and also pushing wood in other areas. I picked it up, then ran outside to look for Ava. I soon saw Ava and this really dark figure, which was taking Ava in the backwoods. I then hit the dark figure in the back of the knee, practically stabbing the figure since it had a sharp edge on the side of it. The figure fell back and let out a yell of pain, which is when I grabbed Ava and then practically carried her back into the house. Very stupidly, I left the weapon I had outside. Since I was in a panic, I think that I just didn't have time to think about it since Ava was the main priority for me. I get back inside and close the garage door, hoping that was the end of it. I decided not to call the cops because I get really nervous when it comes to cops, so I just wanted to avoid that. I ran upstairs but tried not to make too much noise to see if any of the kids were awake due to hearing the commotion from outside. There were only about two kids who were awake, and they asked what was happening. I told them to just fall back asleep and that there was a situation that happened. They really wanted to know what, but I just told them I'd tell them in the morning. I really don't blame them. I think I would also want to know what was happening, especially after all that commotion. So anyway, I go back downstairs on the couch where Ava thankfully was this time, and she falls asleep with the comfort of me there the whole time. Fast forward to the morning. It's around 7:30 and I can hear some commotion from upstairs. The kids were up and playing. Ava had woke me up and she was really happy to see me there. I think I really made her feel safe. After that night, me and Ava's connection was a little bit different from before. As the story is becoming better, the final spook is yet to come, so get ready. I walked downstairs to see if anything had been stolen. I check and I didn't really see anything out of the ordinary. Well, nothing out of the ordinary, except for one thing. There happened to be a paper that was in the garage. It was taped to the sliding door, and I think that's why I paid attention to it. I started to read it, and it said one word. Revenge. I was really scared reading this because how the hell could someone have put this here? Then reality hit me that someone had to have come inside after the garage door had been closed, which is when I thought we were safe. I haven't shared this story with Ava because I don't want her to feel scared or threatened more than she probably already does. I do still have a few questions left unanswered though. Who did this? Why did they target this house specifically? And last but not least, did the intruder purposely try and take Ava out of everyone there? Why did he want her specifically? I know I'll probably never have my answers to these questions, but it's absolutely chilling to think about.